This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Money had everything to do with the ending of apartheid in South Africa. The attention of the world press played a part, United Nations sanctions played a part, and public pressure from the global pulpit played a part. But the divestiture of major multinational corporations was probably the true beginning of the end. Just a few months ago, Sudan's energy minister, Awad Al Jaz, told reporters in Khartoum that a major oil field was discovered in southern Darfur. So, as has long been questioned, money may have something to do with forcing the people of Darfur off their land. And if the Khartoum government is feeling so impervious to bad PR on the world stage that they could manhandle several members of U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's entourage, then maybe the withdrawal of financial investment is the most potent leverage left. And so in September 2004, Reeves helped initiate the Divest Sudan campaign. Now back to Kathy Golden and Eric Reeves. So what leverage, if any, does the rest of the world have with the Khartoum government? What can be used?
Well, unless the international community acts in concert, there's very little that can be done unilaterally. The United States already has comprehensive trade and economic sanctions in place. The Europeans profess themselves scandalized by atrocities in Darfur, and yet many European companies continue to do business as usual with the genocidal regime in Khartoum, as do many Asian companies. Many of these companies, it should be noted, both European and Asian, trade their shares on the New York Stock Exchange, and I've long argued that there should be a divestment campaign that targets shareholdings in these companies, companies which, as I say, continue to support Khartoum, which has an enormous external debt. On a per capita basis, Sudan is probably the most indebted nation in the world. It can only survive by virtue of ongoing capital and commercial investments, which take place in many ways. Among them, though, are investments by way of the New York Stock Exchange. I think all college and university endowments should be screened for these companies. I think state legislatures should follow the examples of New Jersey and Illinois, both of which passed laws recently demanding that all state pension plans be screened for those companies, European and Asian, which are supporting the Khartoum government.
But the Sudan divestment movement is gaining steam, is it not?
It is certainly gaining steam. I began my efforts to start again a new divestment campaign. I started a campaign in 1999 targeting Talisman Energy, the Canadian oil company operating in southern Sudan. And though not widely reported in this country, that was ultimately a smashing success. Talisman was forced to withdraw, and in the end, we had forced every single public institutional shareholder of Talisman Energy in this country to divest. The state of New York, the state of New Jersey, the state of California, the state of Texas, the city of New York, the state of Wisconsin, and huge private institutionals such as TIAA CREF, which is the Retirement Investment Vehicle for American Higher Education, the largest private pension plan in the world, divested from Talisman. Well, less than a year ago, I said, it's time to dust off this effort in a new way. And I think we're going to see when state legislatures reconvene, when colleges and campuses see students resume studies in the fall, we're going to see the divestment campaign explode forward. I think we have to say that there must be a threshold for all investments. There must be some point at which we say ethical screening of those investments is obligatory. And certainly complicity in massive genocidal destruction meets that threshold, however high we may set the bar.
And how do we get the media and the public that they speak to care more about this or to be more observant to what is going on, especially with regards to the divestment movement?
Well, that's a challenge. I think every single person can call up the person or the institution that controls his or her retirement dollars and ask about whether or not Sudan-supporting countries or Sudan-related investments are in one's retirement portfolio. And I think collective actions by students and by state legislatures are obviously ways that have already garnered a good deal of public news attention, perhaps not as much as we might like, but certainly the divestments in Illinois and New Jersey, as well as divestments by Harvard University and Stanford University, got a lot of attention. I think going forward, we want to ensure that there's more such attention. I think we should demand of our congressmen, both in the House and the Senate, a single sentence. The United States must commit itself to leadership internationally, which sees that all necessary resources are provided to stop genocide in Darfur. That sentence alone, if everyone commits to it, forces the question, what are the necessary resources? Condoleezza Rice was asked in March by the Washington Post repeatedly, how many troops are required to stop genocide in Darfur? The question was that simple, that point blank, and was asked three times. Each time Condoleezza Rice said, I don't know. Well, I don't believe that's true. I think she knows how many troops, approximately, are required to stop genocide, and I believe the reason she didn't say so is that to give an honest account would be to reveal how inadequate the African Union is to providing that force level. The International Crisis Group, the most distinguished of those organizations trying to promulgate an appropriate policy on Darfur, has recently suggested a NATO bridging force, a force that would provide the military personnel necessary until the African Union is able to provide what the International Crisis Group estimates is a minimum necessary, 12 to 15,000, and that's certainly at the low end of the military assessments I have heard, and I've talked to a number of military people. But the African Union is struggling, and I would emphasize that word struggling, to reach 7,000 in Darfur by October, and they do so without a mandate to protect either civilians or humanitarian operations. That simply must change if we're serious about addressing the key security issues in Darfur.
Professor Reeves, is there any particular, including your own websites, you'd like to give us addresses now to drive our listeners towards?
I think the International Crisis Group, which is at crisisgroup.org, or crisisweb.org, or perhaps both. I'm not sure at the moment, but I would say this is one of the best ways to follow in detail what's happening in Sudan and in Darfur in particular. Also, the websites of Amnesty International, AI.org, and Human Rights Watch, HRW.org, are extremely good in reporting on human rights abuses in Darfur and Sudan going back many, many years.
Thank you so very much, Professor Reeves.
Hey, my pleasure.
Since 1986, almost as long as civil war raged in southern Sudan, Mary Knoll's sisters Teresa Baldini, age 67, and Madeline McHugh, age 85, have lived in solidarity with their neighbors, most recently in Nauruz. There, they are the only white residents, and friends in the community call the sisters the twins, even though Teresa and Maddie look nothing alike. When bombing attacks accelerated against the Christian and animist people of the region in 1992, Teresa and Maddie were forced to flee to Kenya. After Maddie recovered from a bout of cerebral malaria, the sisters returned to Sudan in 2000. At times, they felt powerless to help, but were reminded of the value of a shared suffering when, while huddling together in a ditch during a strafing raid, they felt water on the backs of their legs and found a crying little girl trying to crawl between them for safety. The sisters were given a concrete bomb shelter built to protect at best 15, but they frequently fit at least 20 neighbors in and endured attacks three times a week. One trick? Keeping snakes out of the shelter. Teresa says you don't want to find one in there when you run for shelter during a raid and there's no time to grab a stick for a quick eviction. Here's Kathy with Sister Teresa Baldini.
What would you want to say to the American public about what's happening in Darfur?
Well, the same bombing planes that bombed us are now bombing Darfur. And what concerns the people around us regarding the Khartoum government, if they are bombing Darfur, they are bombing the black Muslims in Darfur. They are arming, they are giving weapons and money to the Arab Muslims in Darfur, the Janjaweed. And the women who are being raped are the black. This does not give credibility to a fundamentalist Muslim government. And what it's saying to the people in the South, if they are treating their own Muslim brothers and sisters like this, what are they going to do to us Christians and animists who have a different faith? And the government of China is on the Security Council, and there have been at least two times brought up to the Security Council concern about the genocide in Darfur. And each time China has vetoed to do any sanctions against the Khartoum government. And back in 1994, the government of China came to Sudan and made agreements with the Khartoum government to lease oil wells in the south. And they have at least two, if not more, of those oil wells. They have also built a pipeline from the south to Port Sudan, something like 1,800 kilometers. China has vested interests in the Sudan, and I feel it's a conflict of interest when genocide is happening in Darfur. Most people who go to Darfur and see with their own eyes what is happening call it genocide.
Teresa, tell our listeners, tell us about those planes strafing so low.
Well, you do become scared. We try to encourage the people that they need to go for safety, to get into one of the holes, and we have built ourselves. We made homemade cement blocks, and it goes at least 8 feet down, and it has a 10-inch reinforced concrete top. A young Sudanese man helped us, and he said it could hold a good 12, 15 people. Well, we've had over 20 in that little bunker, and I feel when the bombing plane comes, no one can be left out. You just squeeze in.
Can an average Joe's interest raise pressure against the government of Sudan? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. Jim Arrarone, Eric Reeves, and Mary Knoll's sister Teresa Baldini are just some of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. You heard music today by Yelasan Yumoya Maafrika and Sri Chamoy. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guest, please go to our program's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.